From the shores of the Chesapeake Bay to the top of the Rocky Mountains, this is the Stop That or You'll Go Blind podcast.
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
I'm catching you mid-sip, it sounds like.
I've got the old Colorado dry mouth. Something about the altitude or something. I can't go anywhere without water. I always have to have water on me.
Yeah. It's better than the Colorado cotton mouth.
Yes, there you go.
Sorry, I would not know.
How was your week?
It was good. Little question mark overhead.
Yeah.
Not as chaotic as last week, just with executive orders and phone ringing off the hook.
Yeah.
It was, you know, trucking along.
I was talking to a friend tonight about that, about the whole Trump thing. And I got to tell you that, you know, 1.2 million people marched the day after he was inaugurated. And there's been protests, I think, like every day. And I thought to myself, you know what? It's going to change him. I mean, when you see the amount of protests and the volume of people that oppose you, it's got to do something to you. And I've been proven wrong on that just over and over.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's been interesting learning a lot about this narcissistic personality disorder, this NPD that everyone says he has. And just will he change his demeanor and his tone and his rhetoric or not? I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So,
how are the kids?
Kids are good. It was cold here today. It's been a really warm winter, but today it finally felt like winter. But I still, like, we had cabin fever, so we still had to get him out of the house and, like, run him because it's just losing my mind. So,
yeah.
I need to get a new needle for the record player. It's been real nice for my birthday the other week. They got me some records. They got me, like, a Daft Punk record and an old Bob Dylan record and Bruno Mars. And we got this record player, but the needle's dead. And I can't play music on it right now. And it's been nice because when it was working, on a cold day when they didn't want to do anything, they could just dance. And it was great.
Yeah.
Like, they really love to shake it up. But, yeah not so much today.
I saw them dance to Thriller one time. They love Michael Jackson.
Yeah, we need to teach them the moves. I think we'll try to maybe that could be a good Halloween activity next year. Well, do you ever see that?
Yeah.
Did you ever see that prison in the Philippines where everybody did the Thriller?
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, that was genius. There hasn't been, like, anything on the internet that has wooed me like that in the recent year or two. Like, when something goes viral, like some random thing you'd stumble on.
Yeah. Lane asked me, I think for graduation I'm going to buy myself a record player because I missed that. Vinyl was great.
Yeah, and it's readily available now.
Yeah.
It's funny how it's kind of coming around. I even heard somebody said that cassette tapes are coming back.
Nah, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah. Although the guy they were interviewing, it was on NPR, the guy they were interviewing who was saying they're coming back was like the one manufacturer of cassette tapes. So I'm sure he's like, "Oh, of course they're coming back." Like, yeah, everybody wants them, right? Right?
So. Well, the last company that was producing VHS tapes just went out of business.
Oh, did it really?
They were the final company that was producing VHS tapes, and they're done now. And I wonder, with you would probably know this, I wonder with cassette tapes, since it's analog, if the sound quality is actually better off a cassette tape than a disc. Probably not.
Not than a CD, but it's better than an MP3. But it's still sort of has that compressed sound. But I like the sound of tape over MP3 still, or, you know, AAU or whatever, AAC.
Yeah.
Whatever the Apple formats are and all that.
Well, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this the other day. I'm gonna ask you who your top three favorite bass players are, and I bet you I know the three you're gonna name, but I just want to see how smart I am.
Oh man!
Your top three.
Now, Should I choose the top three that I think you'll choose for me, or should I choose my?
Yes.
Well, I'd probably say John Entwistle. Is he one of
them? That's one. That's one.
He's just, man, his sound on that buzzer bass was just always so, like, delicate, but, like, raw and loud.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Entwistle, man, best bass player. Like, mainstream, or can I get, like, kind of funky fusion? I'll stay mainstream.
Because so far, I got John Entwistle.
Paul McCartney.
No, not on my list.
Okay. Oh, really? Oh, man.
Yeah.
He plays, like, hard stuff. Like, he's a real hard bass player to try to mimic. Well, let's see. Geddy Lee from Rush.
He was on my list.
Yeah, Geddy Lee from Rush. I'd say those will be my three. So who's the other third then? Who's the
Their third? Tony Levin.
Let me take back Geddy Lee and put in Tony Levin, because he's a badass.
Okay. All right. So I was very close.
Yeah, that's man. Yeah.
So then what are the top three in the obscure?
Sorry, Geddy. Well, I wouldn't say they're obscure, but they're more like on the jazz side, like Jaco Pastores was a bass player that died like a couple decades ago, but he was in a band called Weather Report, and he was sort of a monster. Jimmy Jamerson is a Motown bass player that's kind of obscure, but he was part of the whole Motown sound, and just an amazing, like, if you listen to any of the Motown stuff, like Ain't No Mountain High Enough or just all that classic Motown, he was usually the guy playing on it, and he was just solid, and he had that groove that just made you want to hop. Like, just, he was one of those things in Motown that just made you, you know, sort of move. John Patitucci's a really good bass player. He's another sort of jazz influence, but kind of goes fusion sometimes. Stanley Clark. Like, those guys, I mean, those guys are also all dated. I'm sure there's, like, I wish I was more up to speed on, like, new bass players that are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really good podcast called No Guitar Is Safe. Have you heard of it?
No.
I think you'd really kind of dig it, actually. It's, if you ever do podcasts just when you're driving around and time to kill, they're usually, like, an hour, but it's this, one of the editors for Guitar Player Magazine goes and interviews other guitarists and he jams with them, but it's like guys like Steve Vai and Joe Satriani, one of the women that played guitar for Michael Jackson, like some really amazing guitarists, the guy that plays with Bruno Mars on that Uptown Funk You Up, like all these different guitarists. And it's just really interesting because they also talk a lot about the instrument and how they get the sound.
Right.
And so it's a little nerdy, but it's my favorite one that when it pops up on my, downloaded podcast, because they automatically download for me, I get excited. So
isn't it the bass player that sort of sets the tone when you're playing in a live band, or is that the drummer? Like, one of them is like you, one of them you really couldn't do without.
Well, definitely the drummer gives you the beat, but the bass player kind of pushes you forward. Like, the drummer starts you marching, but I always feel that the bass player is the one that actually starts you stepping forward.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're just kind of marching in place. You know, he kind of takes you along the musical arrangement, and then the guitarist fleshes it out. But that's my own personal philosophy as a bass player.
Well, it's funny. Had you asked me who my favorite bass player was, the answer would, you would guess it would be like, Roger Waters. And anyone that plays with Roger Waters, and then anyone who's listening to Roger Waters.
Well, who else? Who would be your who's your three favorite singers?
Oh wow! Number one, this is bad. Number one would be Neil Diamond.
That's pretty awesome.
No, we're just going on vocals, right?
Yeah, just vocals, just straight up.
Neil Diamond. I'm having a brain freeze. Barry White.
Yeah.
And wow, number three. That's good. That's a good question. I love David Gilmour's voice. So there you go.
He is sort of angelic. Yeah.
Yeah. Neil Diamond is eternal. You gotta love that guy's voice.
He was in the. Did you ever watch The Last Waltz by The Band? It was a Martin Scorsese movie.
No.
It was The Band's last concert. The Band was like the backup group for Dylan, but then they went solo. They did a bunch of songs like
I remember. Yeah,
Purple
I
know Creek. The Band. And, yeah, so they've been in the sort of the podcast circuit lately because Robbie Robinson, their guitarist, has a book that's come out, I guess. So he's been making the market run and media and stuff. But they had this really good I don't know if I call it a documentary, but it was like a musical movie and a music documentary. I guess that's what you have to call it. But Martin Scorsese produced it and shot it. And it was back in 76. And it has Neil Diamond is in it. Like Eric Clapton's in it. Neil Diamond's in it. The Staple Singers, which is like a gospel group. Like it's an amazing group. It was the band's last concert. So they just.
Okay.
But it's really good. You should check it out. Because to have Neil Diamond and then like Muddy Waters, the blues artist, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very eclectic mix.
You won't find many people my age that will readily admit that Neil Diamond is their favorite vocalist, but I guess I'm just comfortable with who I am.
Yeah, but you get 20-year-olds that if you bust into Caroline, Sweet Caroline, yep, they'll all go, ba, ba, ba. You know, they'll do the one little sticky part.
Well, you know who actually has probably one of the worst singing voices, but he made a fortune anyway? Roger Daltrey. There's a new album at the Who's most current or most recent live album, which is really good. He is struggling. He is absolutely struggling.
He's like 70, isn't he? He's got to be up there.
Yeah, but he, I don't know how he did it. I think if people would say, well, he's got the best scream of all time. All right, fine. But other than that, he's pretty rough.
Well, did Brian Johnson of AC/DC like lose his voice or go deaf or something? Because now they have Axl Rose singing for AC/DC.
Yeah.
When I think of like rock voices.
I think so. I guess I didn't know that Axl Rose was fronting AC/DC. I do know that Adam Lambert is fronting Queen right now. And supposedly Adam Lambert is a dead ringer for Freddie Mercury.
Is he really?
In terms of vocals, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've read articles and I saw interviews where people are like, you can't replace Freddie Mercury, but Adam Lambert comes damn close.
Like George Michael. I remember when George Michael died right after Christmas, they had all that. They kept playing him singing one of the Queen songs when he did the thing at Wembley or wherever it was.
Yeah.
And it was like, man. But then you realize, you know, for someone to be able to pull that off, how a feat it is, but it was so natural for Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Man, that guy could sing.
Oh, he was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I wonder what's going to be like 5-10 years from now. Because I think like with the kids, like, you know, we were going through a closet and I found this old thing of CDs and busted some in, and like Led Zeppelin was in them. And I just remember when I was like 10 listening to Zeppelin 2 for the first time and it like blowing my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think sometimes like, Ollie, try these headphones on and, you know, like give him a song, my 7-year-old, but nothing's really rocked his world yet. And he's only 7, but maybe when he's 10, 11, 12, but I don't know if music would stand to be that kind of music. Like, is Led Zeppelin to my 7-year-old like us listening to 40s music? Because it's about the same distance apart, you know?
Well, the thing is that there's nothing, there's nothing like Led Zeppelin today. Forget comparing. I'm talking about just the sound of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
The lyrical quality. The craftsmanship, there's nothing today that is anything like that. I don't know anything about music. I don't know anything about the recording process, but there's something about today's music that sounds really kind of just programmed. Like there wasn't an actual drummer in the studio. It was some beat that was syncopated or kind of came out of a machine or something. Like if you listen to a Led Zeppelin track, those guys were playing. I mean, so
it's very dynamic is one of the words they use in recording, where it is, it's like when you look at the sine wave, you can see the ups and the downs. Whereas now it's everything is so compressed and right in your face. It is all synth or electronic beats. Even if you have a real drummer, sometimes the real drummer will be playing on top of like a artificial drummer. And so, yeah, the sine wave just looks different. Now it's just like a wall of waves versus you would see the ups and the downs and the troughs. And
yeah.
And which is probably why it was so emotional.
Oh, I just remember back in college during Live in the Lobby, you'd walk into the lobby and there's a band playing. And, you know, with the exception of amplifiers and a mixer someplace, I mean, it was like a raw sound.
Yeah.
And you just, I don't think my daughter, who's 4 and a half, is going to grow up with any of that. But then again, I mean, my daughter's also going to grow up probably not listening to FM radio. So maybe she will be exposed to a variety. She'll most likely be listening to satellite radio or something like that.
I wonder, like, just with the kids, like, what will be their punk rock? Because for us, it was kind of like, you know, it was the music that our parents didn't listen to.
Yeah.
Like, what is going to be their punk rock experience of just identity? And music, obviously, is a part of identity.
Well, I remember my parents, they loved the Beatles only up to Sgt. Pepper. Then everything after Sgt. Pepper, they would not listen to.
Yeah.
And, of course, I came along and I'm like, wait, there's this whole other world after Sgt. Pepper. What is this White Album? That was always, to me, the great dividing line between me and my parents. They loved everything up to Sgt. Pepper, and then everything else was garbage. Rye was more interested in everything that came after.
So if you had one song, if you were, let's say, you had a day with Maddie, and you know it was like the one song to say, look, this is going to not change your life. I mean, I say it in a way where, like, I'm sure Oliver would listen to the song and be like, song is stupid, Dad, what are you talking about? But, like, I'm trying to think of, like, what one song would I play for the boys if I wanted to just kind of say, this is what it's all about. Like, this is rock and roll. This is what freedom and expression is all about. Can you think of one song that would probably, where you would, like, get the really nice headphones, sit her down, just say, just listen?
You know, the song that comes to mind is to me the kind of the defining song of the 80s. It was the remix of Walk This Way with Run DMC and Aerosmith. Yeah. And there's something about was able to weave this into an essay that I wrote for school on race relations and things like that. That song to me defined the 80s, where you had this new type of music, rap, and you had this classic rock sound. And whether they tried to do it on purpose or not, they created something really beautiful and really great with these two different sounds coming together. And I don't know. I think it sounds corny, but I would love for her to have that moment where she hears that song and she knows that not everything has to be black and white. There is this middle ground that we can find. And to me, that song and that video just is so it captures so much of what I liked about the 80s. So that's probably the song I'd wanted to hear through headphones.
Yeah, that's interesting. I just, because, yeah, the whole coming together. And when you think of it now, I mean, so much of music now is when you go through, like, the top 40 list, because, like, I look through, like, iTunes top songs and stuff. And it's predominantly like hip hop, rap, R&B. But it's funny to think from a mainstream perspective, there was a time when that was not mainstream at all.
No.
Like, that would have been like breakdancing was punk rock and hip hop was, that's interesting. Yeah. Cause Run DMC was, I remember getting the Run DMC tape when I was like in sixth grade and it was,
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah. It was amazing. But then, you know, I was a Anglo kid in the burbs, and it you know, surrounded by you know, the people 10 years older than me, they were listening to Aerosmith, they were listening to Zeppelin, you know, mm-hmm. That's how I got into all that stuff, was like the older kids. It's interesting. Yeah. Huh.
And then the song you probably thought I was going to say, like, Us and Them, Pink Floyd. Absolutely.
Nah, I was going to maybe say like Great Gig in the Sky. No. Like, you know, like, but,
and then your pick would be,
see, now you got me making me think of different, like that has a whole social level to it that I didn't even, you know, think of. I was kind of thinking more punk rock, but see, now I'm kind of thrown, you know, like, I mean, Anthrax doing the Chuck D, the Public Enemy song, the bass, How Low Can You Go, Death Row, What a Brother Know, Once Again Back is, what was that? Bring the Noise by, Public Enemy, and then Anthrax covered it. But that's like after your song. So it's kind of like, well, that's not that original if you think about a mashup, because Run DMC and Aerosmith did it before. Man, I don't know.
I peg you as picking like a Bob Dylan song, or
yeah, but I know like he would probably say like, oh, this is like fuddy duddy music. It'd be like someone playing, you know, old folk music when I was a kid or something. Like Woody Guthrie sitting me down when I was 14 trying to play me Woody Guthrie, and I'd be like, whatever, old man.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, you play guitar for your kids, so
yeah,
I'd have to think that when you pick up a guitar and play a song for kids, 8 out of 9 out of 10 times it's going to be a folk tune.
Yeah. I might, for some reason, Rock the Casbah is coming to my mind right now a lot. Like, you know, it's a punk song, but it's pop. It's got a lot of political connotations in music, like the idea that a song can be extremely political. But it's, at the same point too, it just makes you want to kind of dance.
Yeah. I've been going with the 80s more and more, only because when I'm driving Madeline to daycare or wherever we're going, half the time we're listening to Disney tunes.
Yeah.
And I just get to a point where I can't listen to Let It Go one more time. So I go for something that I know is innocent, kind of clean, and it's usually going to be the 80s. And she loves it. She absolutely – there was one time I drove her to daycare, and it was about a 15-minute ride. And the whole way there, she's listening to Let It Go. And we pull into the parking lot, and I take her in. I get back in the car, and now I'm driving for 15 minutes to work, and I'm still listening to the Frozen soundtrack. And I didn't – I didn't realize I was still listening to it until I started complaining about it. Like, I hate this song. Why do I have to hear this again? And realize, oh, she's not in the car. I could change the channel. And that's when you know that was the moment when I knew I've got to start changing it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I can't listen to this Disney soundtrack one more time.
Yeah. It'll at least you weren't listening to it and having tears roll down your eyes and sort of emotional.
No.
Yeah.
I was almost there though, but no.
Yeah.
No.
So I got a good comment about parenting advice, like in our other podcast when we said parenting advice. What would be so have you had the situation with her hearing music that's not that good? We had the issue today with a song that dropped the F-bomb, a hip-hop song. How are you at filtering out the stuff that maybe you don't want her to listen to?
I'm pretty slow.
Yeah.
Usually I don't realize that what she's watching or listening to is inappropriate until it's too late. My wife, she's able to catch it almost immediately, but with me, it's like, no, I have to wait for the F-bomb to be dropped and then go, oh, wait, so this isn't good for her to watch or listen to.
Yeah. We're the same way. They unfortunately, the daycare they've gone to, they've learned all kinds of words. And it's just, it's hard to it's like once the cat's out of the bag, it's hard to rein it back in.
Yeah, but your kids are going to school in DC, so they're you know, all the kids are dropping F bombs about Trump and everything right now.
Oh yeah, all the little 4-year-old protesters are kicking up a storm. The toddler brigade.
Yeah, I would say that I'm more liberal as a parent. I mean, I let her watch Ghostbusters. I let her watch a little bit of The Simpsons, which she's kind of hooked on now. So I would say I'm a little bit more liberal. I don't screen everything before she watches it or screen everything before she listens to it. I try to use common sense.
Yeah.
I try to ask myself, okay, if she hears this or she sees this, is this the worst thing ever? And it's usually no, but I think in terms of my parenting, I just go with the obvious stuff. There are, you know, it's just there are certain obvious TV shows and movies that I'm not going to let her watch.
No.
But I would say I'm probably more on the liberal end of it.
I think I am too. It's funny. My main concern isn't that they hear the word. I mean, because I'd like them to not be afraid of language and being able to express themselves. But I'm more afraid that they're just going to go out in public and just start dropping it themselves like crazy and just be like, oh, shucks. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh, whose kid is that? I don't know. I'd say it looks like me, but I have no idea who this kid is.
Yeah.
I think that's my biggest fear of them hearing it is that they're just going to completely, like, apparently the daycare one day, there was just a whole rash of like 12 kids just yelling like, fuck, 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 fuck. And it was like letters went home and it was just, so.
Letters went home, just kind of a CYA type of moment where.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
School is like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So.
We don't. Yeah.
Needless to say, the boys are not at that daycare anymore either, too. It was getting a little rambunctious there toward the end. So, yeah.
Maddie doesn't, she's heard, she heard the F-bomb somewhere, and I think one time I was holding something and I dropped it accidentally and I said, shit. And just, she was big on that word for a day or two. I'm more worried about, you know, the context for which she says some things. She was a couple of weeks ago, I was taking her to daycare and I would only let her bring one toy to daycare, one stuffed animal. And of course she wanted to bring three and I'm trying to reason with her. I'm trying to tell her, Madeline, no, you could bring one with you and they have 50,000 toys at this daycare. And so we're in the car and she is just wailing. She is furious with me. And in one breath, she said, you're stupid. I want to punch you in the face and I hate you.
Oh, man.
In one breath.
Oh, yeah.
She said, I hate you. I want to punch you in the face and you're stupid. Whatever it was. And I actually had to, like, I was actually impressed. But, I mean, it was really horrifying. There was no F-bomb. There was no cursing. But what she was able to say in one breath was, when your kid does something like that, you just have to, you know, you definitely have to start reevaluating your parenting a little bit.
Now, Elliot does that too, though. We're like, they'd be like, can I have some candy? No, you're a stupid bully. Okay. I didn't know I was beating you up on the playground right now. I just told you that you're not having dinner yet and you wanted to have some M&Ms. Sorry. You know, it's that just sort of like, so.
Look, the best you can really hope to do is raise your child and hope they don't become a serial murderer or something like that. You can only do the best you can.
I know. God, that's so frightening, but one day at a time, just like Valerie, what's her name?
Valerie Bertinelli.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think the other thing that's important to keeping you sane while you parent is I'm big on picking my battles. There are some things I'll let her get away with. I don't think my wife has learned that. My wife will pick every battle with her, and with me, I tend to be more strategic, you know. So, all right, if she goes to daycare without wearing socks today, all right, she's going to be cold. But do I really want to deal with the argument that's going to ensue over me telling her to go back upstairs and put on socks? You know, 9 out of 10 times, no, it's fine. Freeze.
Yeah.
Pick your battles.
Yeah, pick your battles. And let's hope the war will end up without us in an institution.
It would be nice not to be a casualty of this war.
Thanks for listening to the Stop That or You'll Go Blind podcast. Visit us online at stopthatore.com and on Twitter @StopThatOr.